Welcome to Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks. Two of Indiana's three political parties already have their party nominees sealed up for the November general election. Democrats are elevating Jennifer McCormick, a former Republican who was our last elected superintendent of public instruction. Libertarians will rerun Donald Rainwater as he performed beyond expectations 4 years ago. Republicans in Indiana prepare to nominate their gubernatorial candidate in the upcoming May 7th primary. The Grand Ole Party has held the Indiana's governor's office since Mitch Daniels defeated the last Democratic governor, the late Joe Kernan, 20 years ago. Six Republican candidates are vying for the top spot. They include Indiana Junior's United States Senator Mike Braun, businessman and former Indiana Commerce Secretary Brad Chambers, businessman Eric Doden, former Attorney General Curtis Hill, homemaker Jamie Rittenour, and my longtime friend who is with me in the studio today, the Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. Welcome, Governor, to Policy and Politics.
Welcome to you, Dave, and it's always good to be here with you, although it's been too long.
It has been too long, but you were in the studio a couple of years ago when you were here for a different interview.
As Auditor of State.
Well, you know, that you were auditor a long time ago, weren't you? Actually, I wanted to touch on that because when it comes to your experience in government, it really can't be matched. I mean, you started as a county commissioner, right?
County auditor.
County auditor. Then yep. It went to county commissioner, right?
Right.
And then you and I served in the House of Representatives. When did you get there?
2005 through 2013.
Okay. I was there from 96 to 08. You teamed up with Eric Holcomb, of course, and you got appointed. Remind me how you became the lieutenant governor. I guess it was after Mike Pence.
After the state representative, I was auditor of state.
Right.
And then, when the whole domino effect came in Indiana, when Trump tapped Mike Pence, then that opened up a spot, and Eric Holcomb became the gubernatorial candidate.
You became lieutenant governor.
And then asked me to be lieutenant governor candidate, yes.
So nearly 8 years under your belt as lieutenant governor, so you've had a lot of experience there. You've had a great, vast experience up and down the list of different offices from state to local government, and I think that plays in your favor, even though I know there's some people that think that, you know, anyone that's been there a long time shouldn't stay there, but you and I know there's a lot of advantages for people who have actually had the kind of experience you've had, and I guess if I was voting in the Republican primary, I'd probably vote for you, Suzanne. I'm telling you that right now.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'm honored.
I'm not sure it's much of an endorsement for you being like so active on the Democratic side.
Well, I'll take an endorsement.
Well, there you go. But let's talk about this for a second. You're a modern day graduate from Evansville. You've got a bachelor's degree from Purdue, and good luck Boilermakers this weekend.
That's right.
I hope they pull it off just like Indiana State, of course. We're recording this before Thursday night's big game, but they're 1-for-1, at least at this recording. You're married to Larry, and you've got an adult daughter named Courtney. So give us some other quick background before I dive into some basic questions on what we would ask anyone running for governor.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this.
Yep.
Did you grow up in a political home?
Yes. My parents were very active in their local unions.
Okay. Well, see, I didn't.
Okay.
My parents always voted, but I do not recall a single political discussion growing up.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I really wasn't drawn to politics initially. You know, when I graduated from Purdue University, I was a stockbroker, a realtor, a small business owner. And while those were very gratifying, I didn't feel like I was making a difference. And so I thought, if I want to be engaged in making a difference, government's where I need to be involved. And so I got involved in politics and decided that if I was the best candidate and could make a difference for people, I should run for office. And I ran, and I lost my very first election.
And what year was that?
Oh, my goodness. That was 1986.
Okay.
Ran for county auditor and lost. And then I thought, well, you know, if I can't get elected, then maybe I can elect Republicans. And I became a county chair. And did that for 4 years and then came back and ran again for county auditor and won. Served 8 years as an auditor and then was a commissioner and, as we mentioned, state representative. And so, you know, I have always tried to pattern my public service after how Abraham Lincoln served. Because Lincoln said that government should do for people only what they cannot do better for themselves and no more. So we have to fight the problems of too much and inefficient government. We've got to deliver services efficiently and cost-effectively to those that need them, but we should always measure our progress not by the amount of assistance we give people, but by the number of people we get off of assistance and back on their own 2 feet. And so that has kind of been my guiding principle as I've served throughout government. And unlike my opponents, I do have the knowledge and the relationships to be able to deliver results for Hoosiers as governor. You know, they don't have that experience. I don't need on-the-job training. I can hit the ground running, taking what I know and making it work to deliver results for Hoosiers, because Hoosiers want someone to stand up for them and fight to eliminate the state income tax, to fight the drug cartels and their Chinese allies, and then help those Hoosiers that are struggling with mental illness and addiction.
Well, let's talk with you about Axe the Tax. When I first heard that proposal, I'm thinking, won't that hurt like lower income people if all of a sudden folks who pay income tax, especially the more they make, that money goes away? Don't we have to make up that some other way? I mean,
no, you know, I am talking about a tax cut. I'm not talking about tax replacement. So give me a few minutes and I will explain it to you.
We'll make it brief because I want to talk about a lot of stuff today. So give me the highlights on why you think axing the tax, or at least you're saying reduce the income tax percentage.
I am saying we're going to eliminate the state income tax.
Completely.
We're going to get there. Okay. It's not going to happen overnight.
And why is that a good thing?
Well, first of all, Hoosiers are struggling today because of the high cost of living and inflation. You know, it costs today $11,400 more than it did 3 years ago just to meet basic household needs.
But hopefully won't last forever. I mean, this has been a COVID mess.
People are struggling. And we have an opportunity for the average Hoosier to give them $2,000 of their money back. And what do you do when you get your money back? You put it into the economy. 78% of your pre-tax income goes into the economy. So we give people their money back. They're going to put it into the economy, and that's going to grow other revenues. This is what Iowa's been doing, and their revenues have grown while they have cut their income tax by 5 percentage points. And guess what? Their state income tax represents 38% of their state revenues. And so you can do it, and we have to do it, because we need to give money back to Hoosiers. Now, my opponents, whenever we have joint forums, they say, oh, you can't do it, it's a gimmick. But what they're really saying is, government needs more of your money, and you need less of it. And I'm saying, no, we're going to give you your money, you're going to put it into the economy, we're going to grow revenues, and then that is what will cause small businesses to grow, because the National Federation of Independent Businesses, which represents small businesses, said the tax, that if we could eliminate the income tax, that would help small business more than any other tax. So we eliminate the state income tax. We give people their money back, which they're putting in the economy, growing revenues. We end up helping small businesses here in Indiana grow. But then we attract people to Indiana when we become a no-income tax state.
How many states have no income tax? Do you know?
Well, I know that, here's what I do know, that Indiana, the Tax Foundation says Indiana's 10th in the country for our overall tax environment. Seven of the states ahead of us have no sales or income tax. And so where are people moving to today? Tennessee, Texas, Florida, South Dakota, all states who, by the way, have no income tax, and their GDPs and their population are growing greater than Indiana. Now, here's the kicker. It's not going to happen overnight. It has to be phased in. We have to have triggers in place to protect against economic downturns, because we don't want to cut services.
Sure.
But when we have excess surpluses in revenues, like we did in 2023, because before we passed the budget in 2023, Dave, we had a $6 billion surplus. So we held $2.9 million back as our real surplus. The other $3.1 billion we put into government spending. Not all bad. We paid down on pensions. We paid down on debt. We paid cash for capital projects. But if eliminating the state income tax is a priority, we could have put that money towards eliminating the state income tax, and we get there quicker. And when we eliminate it, we end up giving Hoosiers money back. We allow small business to grow. And then we attract people to Indiana.
My only worry is, if you eliminate it completely and you have an economic downturn, will it really impact the state's revenue stream? I don't know. You tell me. But I guess we're spending, what, $40 billion every 2 years these days since I left, I guess?
44.5.
Okay. It was like in the high 20s, I think, when I left.
It keeps going up. Yeah, that's right.
Let's dive into some other items. So obviously that's an idea that you've been talking about of just getting rid of the income tax over time, and you see some advantages to that. But obviously the number one focus of the General Assembly and the governor is to fund public education. When you and I served together, I was really impressed how many Republicans and Democrats worked together with the Indiana State Teachers Association. And it seemed like that, I don't know, there was a lot of bipartisan legislation passed. Teachers, I think, led the way in our state versus a lot of other states when it came to their income. And a lot of positive things that I think were going on 20, 25 years ago that I'm not quite seeing now. I'm not seeing as much enthusiasm for education in Indiana. There's fewer people wanting to be a teacher, which bothers people like you and me, because we got to have teachers, of course, in the system. Have we gone too far on maybe with our, I don't want to say the word attack, because some use that word kind of recklessly, but yet, what can we do to make public education a little bit more, I guess, positive, to not only encourage teachers to teach, but it just seems to me we've got to do more to put a little less pressure on teachers, because I think they're under a lot of pressure right now that I'm not sure is really that deserved.
Well, you know, I think your point is well taken, Dave. And not only that, but when I look at growing up, besides my parents, my teachers were the single most important influence on my life.
Absolutely.
And that continues to today. So we have to value our teachers, and we have to respect them, and we have to give them the support to be able to develop the future leaders of Indiana. And so but what I believe needs to happen is that we need to have a total kind of realignment of our education system. So stay with me, okay?
Okay.
So we have five agencies that have some part of education or workforce training. I would take them and consolidate it into one agency where now everyone is, number one, on the same software system, not operating in silos. Everyone's on the same page. Everyone is working to prepare those children for that next step in life, whether it's employment, enrollment, enlistment, or apprenticeship. Because today we have very disjointed approach to education, and that does not really help us in terms of preparing our children for the future. And so when it comes to education and attracting teachers to educate, or attracting people, young students to education, I think not only with education, but there are, in my mind, there are three areas that we really need to look at in terms of getting more young people into those professions. It's law enforcement, it's education, and it's healthcare, because our lives and our livelihoods depend upon those three professions.
Absolutely.
So I think we have to look at favorable tuition terms to be able to attract young people into those professions and get them into those, you know, teaching, healthcare, and then law enforcement positions. There's no one answer, as you know, and as I know, to solving the education system problem. But I think if we have a total realignment of education system, and we look at valuing our education and our educators, and then we look at how we can attract more people into that profession, I think that would go a long way towards getting us where we need to be. And that is, we need to be sure that we're preparing our children for that next step upon graduation.
I can recall when you and I served in the early days before things became like the money follows the child. And I know that's all seems like it's all fair if it's the exact ADM per student all over the state. But I know in our old days, we would sometimes, let's just face it. Let's say if you're in Shoals, Indiana, and that school district obviously doesn't have the property tax base that Fishers or Carmel does, you'd find some creative ways to kind of prop up some of those small rural school districts. I'm not quite seeing that like I did. Now, of course, I know there's some magical ways you can kind of adjust those numbers per district. But have we gone too far with things like vouchers in your mind? I mean, do we need to consider pausing them? Or what's good about a voucher these days when public schools are still struggling to find enough dollars to operate?
Well, I believe that, personally, I believe that parents should have choices in their children's education. And so I support vouchers, and I support charter schools.
And you went to a private school, right?
I went to a Catholic school. Yep,
yep,
12 years of Catholic schools. But I also believe that we have to look at how do we how do we support and how do we, you know, be able to increase the support for our traditional public schools, because 90% of our children go to traditional public schools.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we have to be focused on all the above. And when I talk about realigning the education system, that helps us in terms of being able to realize, I believe, moving forward, more efficiencies within the education system that will allow us to now have more tax dollars to be able to direct towards those schools in Shoals, Indiana, those schools that perhaps need more support to be able to get their children prepared for that next step in life.
Or I think like a Riverton Park or some of these schools that just you just drive through the district and they just don't even have a lot of retail business, let alone industry, you know. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a little tougher from the property tax base to make up some of that budget, I guess, is what I'm trying to point out that I see complaints about at times. Let's keep diving on to some hot issues. Representative Paff was in the studio a couple of weeks ago talking about the session, and she's frustrated that she cannot get answers from the administration on on $1 billion regarding Medicaid. What's going on with the vendor tied into Medicaid, and where's the supposed $1 billion?
Wish I could answer that.
Okay.
I've submitted the same kind of questions to FSSA. You know, I got involved in this issue because I chair the Intellectual and Developmental Disability Task Force. We have 100,000 Hoosiers who have Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, or autism. I chair the task force that supports those Hoosiers. And so when FSSA made a billion-dollar error and came forth in December of 2023 saying that we made an error in our budget forecasting, I called an emergency meeting of the Intellectual and Developmental Disability, or we call it the IDD. You know how we love our acronyms in government.
Right.
The IDD Task Force. So I called an emergency meeting the end of January, and we asked questions of SSSA. They were not able to answer the questions. So I called for an independent audit of FSSA to determine how did these mistakes be made. And quite honestly, Dave, as governor, I would have independent audits of all of our major agencies because I think we can realize cost savings and efficiencies that then can be redirected towards services for Hoosiers.
Sure.
So I have no idea how that billion-dollar, you know, mistake happened. And I called upon not just the governor's office, but the General Assembly to pause it, to try to take steps to be able to help these parents who are caring for their severely disabled, medically complex, needed children. These aren't children that, you know, you send outside to play and then they come in and you set them in front of the TV set. These are children that have ventilators and feed tubes and, you know, tracheotomies that they quite honestly need 24/7 medical care. And if we can't reimburse and pay those parents to take care of their children, who is going to take care of them?
Which is a lot cheaper than if it was in a different environment.
If they were institutionalized.
Yeah, absolutely.
But who's going to take care of them in their homes?
So is the $1 billion, is it possibly, I mean, is it really missing or is it just not accounted for? Or could there be something criminal that we don't know about? I mean, what's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me that somebody wasn't minding the store and somebody wasn't keeping tabs on, you know, how the money was being spent. And so they just weren't accounting for it. And then when they finally accounted for it, you know, it's now something that now they're looking at making cuts.
Wow. So that's a lot of money. I mean, Dirksen talked about this, Senator Dirksen, years ago. Before you know it, $1 billion there and $1 billion there, and you're talking about a lot of money, something
like
that.
Well, and it is, you know, regardless, we should never put our mistakes on the backs of our most vulnerable Hoosiers.
Sure.
And that's the disabled, you know, the elderly, those struggling with mental illness and addiction.
So will we see an audit and maybe some kind of report before the summer is over or not?
The General Assembly put language in one of the bills that said that FSSA needed to submit to the Budget Committee kind of an accounting of what happened and what they're going to do to keep it from happening in the future. So hopefully we'll see that. But, you know, I personally think to get the right answers, you need an outside independent audit.
Sure. We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch of the state of Indiana, and she is running for governor, and we wanted to get her thoughts on a few hot issues. You know, one thing that I wanted to touch on today, okay, so we're one of the first states to rush to a decision on a new abortion law once Roe versus Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And Indiana passed probably one of the most strictest laws in the land. First of all, do you have any regrets now that this law has been put into place and we're starting to see, we've seen it more in Texas, not as much as Indiana, but I still hear rumblings that there's some cases where it's not as easy as you might think to get necessary medical care. And there's some also some concerns that we'll talk about after you answer the first question. Where do you stand on the abortion law? Did we hit the right number, or is it too far?
I'm pro-life, and I support, you know, the bill that was passed in special session.
Okay.
But I tell you what I really support, and what we have to do is we have to put our arms around those mothers that are pregnant or those women that are pregnant and their families. And so the General Assembly appropriated $45 million to be able to provide service and supports for women, for children, and for pregnant women so that we can give them the support that they need as they carry those children and as they deliver them. You know, and it's not just there. There are other examples where we have really supported women who have been pregnant. You know, as Lieutenant Governor, one of the agencies I oversee is the Indiana Housing Community Development Authority. And that agency has put forth tax credits to build three housing developments in Indiana. One's in my hometown of Evansville for women who are pregnant, who are addicted to drugs, that want to deliver healthy babies. And so we have to look at how we can be supportive in terms of that woman, that mother to be, and those children.
But I guess I'm hearing rumblings that there's even like people talking that work at IU Med Center and other professional medical, you know, outlets, which Indiana's a big state when it comes to medicine. I mean, we've got some of the best doctors in the world, I think, in our state, and one saved my life. I'll give Dr. Shaw credit. Back in 2020 when they found a tumor near my brain and it was removed in Indianapolis. So I'm thankful that we have all the medical professionals in our state that we do. However, I've had many people tell me through stories, and kind of some are anecdotal and some are just fear, that, hey, Indiana has went so far with our abortion law that there's liability worries and thinking that maybe I should practice somewhere else besides Indiana, because states like Texas and Indiana, when it comes to our abortion law, become so strict that medical professionals are saying, maybe I should go practice somewhere besides Indiana. Does that bother you, or are you hearing that at all?
You know, one of the things that I guess I would say is we need to do a better job. So kind of hang with me on this.
Okay.
We need to do a better job in telling the authentic story of Indiana. Okay, so another agency that I oversee is the Indiana Destination Development Corporation.
Well, let's take the women's health care, though.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Which encompasses tourism in Indiana.
Right.
And so we were able to get additional funding to help market and tell the story of Indiana.
Okay.
Because if we're not telling the story of Indiana, it gets filled with a lot of other negativity. And so here's the thing. Our neighboring states, Dave, have spent anywhere from $16 to $60 million a year to market their state.
Sure.
And what we have spent in Indiana?
Nothing, probably.
$2 million market Indiana.
You and I complained about this 20 years ago. We've never done a good job marketing
exactly.
the state.
Exactly.
But does it help us when, like, okay, Illinois, Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, they've all got cannabis now but us. You're not for cannabis legislation, are you?
I don't support legalization of marijuana, and let me tell you why.
Why?
Because my family has struggled with mental illness and addiction. My mother struggled with depression and anxiety. My brother was an alcoholic. He was a drug addict. He ended up with mental health issues and drank himself to death. My younger sister, Nancy, died in her early 20s by suicide. Our daughter's 16 years sober. And so, to me, we have so many Hoosiers out there that are struggling because of mental illness and addiction. We need to focus on getting help to them. We need to focus on that, not on legalizing another drug.
Well, but there's a lot of people that like it. There's some that use it over actual drugs, medications, and so forth. And it's become a big market. I mean, half the country can get access to legal weed. I mean, there's one opening in from Bloomington, Indiana. You can be down the interstate and be in Lawrenceville, Illinois, like an hour and 10 minutes from campus. I mean, If all these Hoosiers are going to drive in every direction, are we not going to deal with this issue eventually? Or are we just going to wait and see what, like, Alabama and Mississippi do first, or what? What are we at with this?
You know, I stand with law enforcement, and in fact, I've gotten the endorsement over 24 law enforcement, including the sheriff of Eagle County. I you know, my position's very clear.
You would under no circumstances, whether it's recreational or for municipal purposes, no cannabis for you.
I'm not in favor of legalizing marijuana.
Oh, okay, and let's see. When it comes to abortion, we've already kind of touched on that. Where am I at on time? Because I got to make sure. Oh. What about Hoosiers? And I know this is kind of different compared to some states, and it's kind of hard to explain, but it's part of our Constitution. But should Hoosiers have their voices heard through constitutional amendment ballot initiatives? There's a lot of talk about that, whether it's cannabis or other hot issues. You know what it takes to get an amendment on the actual ballot in Indiana. It's got to go through two consecutive sessions of the General Assembly before it gets on the ballot. Should we do more, or what's your opinion?
Well, I always believe that people cannot weigh in too much in terms of government.
Okay.
People's voices have to be respected. And the more people participate in government, the more engaged government is. And the better job it does, quite honestly. So I wouldn't even be opposed to that. It would be up to the General Assembly to go through the steps to make that happen.
Okay, so you're open to that possibly if the General Assembly would spearhead
that. If the General Assembly passed that and that bill ended up on my desk, I would sign it.
Okay. And then there's also a lot of people that, you know, may not always agree with gay marriage, but yet it's the law of the land. But that's also becoming like a state issue in the minds of some people. Do you support gay marriage, and would you protect it if you were governor?
Well, the Supreme Court has ruled on that decision, so we'll follow those. You know, Indiana will be following those laws and those guidelines.
So as long as the Supreme Court doesn't change it, there's no reason for Indiana to change it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know that Dave, I would never speak for the General Assembly.
Sure.
I don't think you would either.
No. Okay. So, because it seems like it's going to be more of a state issue if this trend continues like the abortion issue was. So I know that I've had people on my ear saying, what's going to happen if that would go backwards versus the fact that there's many people in a same-sex marriage that are...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about hypotheticals. But, we are where we are right now. And
I get it. I'll give you 30 more seconds to plug your website and why people that are voting Republican should vote for you for governor.
You know what? I am the only candidate that has the experience, the passion, the commitment, and the desire to be able to deliver results. And we'll do it by focusing on four building blocks. We're going to grow the economy and our infrastructure. We're going to invest in education and workforce training. We're going to strengthen our families and our communities. And then we're going to modernize state government. And we will do that. And when we do, Hoosiers will benefit, our economy will prosper, and Indiana will be proud.
And if you'd like to know about Suzanne's campaign, go to crouchforindiana.com. But I can vouch for her, even though we're on the separate political parties. I have great respect for this woman, and I think she would make a great governor. But I will admit that I kind of favor the Democrat right now. But if there's going to be a Republican that comes out of that race, I hope it's you, Suzanne.
So you're not going to cross over and take a Republican ballot for me?
I don't think I can keep my Democratic chair's position, but I won't say anything bad about you. How about that?
Thank you. But
good luck to you, Suzanne. I know you're working hard to try to become the gubernatorial nominee and perhaps the next governor. And we've never had a female governor. So you're on track to possibly become that person, either you or Jennifer McCormick, perhaps.
Wouldn't it be nice to have two women as choices?
I think it would be kind of cool. I'll admit that right now. And by the way, I've said this to a lot of people who have asked me when I served, when they talk about women in the legislature, my first response is, we need a lot more women in the legislature, and they're more serious. I think some of the best legislators up there are female legislators. You were one of them as well. And so, yeah, governor, whatever the race might be, we need more people to step up and be involved in public service.
I couldn't agree more. And women represent 51% of the electorate. So our General Assembly should be reflective of that.
Absolutely, it should. Well, I wish we had more time. We could talk all day. But Suzanne Crouch is here today talking about her race for a governor. The race is coming up soon. May 7th is the actual primary election day. So if you'd like to register, be sure to do that before the end of Monday at noon, because that's the deadline to register for the primary, right, Governor?
That's right.
So if you're not registered.
And the solar eclipse.
I know. That's going to be a big day Monday, isn't it?
I'm going to be in Evansville.
Okay. So it should be a lot of fun. Well, Governor, thanks again for stopping by, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you, Dave.
Appreciate you being on the show. Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, Republican candidate for governor in the state of Indiana. Again, more information about her campaign at crouchforindiana.com. Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks is a production of the DLC Media News Department. Downloads of this program and past shows are available at any one of our DLC Media radio station websites. Follow me on X or Facebook to learn who is appearing next week, as well as the times and list of radio stations where you can hear the show first. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.